Hello and welcome to the Untalented Podcast. Today I'm really excited to welcome Elliot Vredenberg, who's currently working as a design director at Mother Design, who's agreed quite short notice, which I'm really happy about. But so looking forward to chatting all things design, and I guess New York kind of centric design. But welcome, Elliot. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. It's been a busy week. Came back after some time off.
Yeah.
So playing a little bit of catch up, but yeah, it's been good.
I think you were saying you perfectly timed your own vacation to coming back to the Mother Design ski trip.
Indeed I did.
So that was well done for that. I think that takes some careful execution.
Yeah, it wasn't intentional, but it worked out.
How was the ski trip?
It was great. I hadn't been snowboarding in about 17 years.
Okay.
So I was not as good as I expected myself to be, but it was fun.
Yeah. Where did you guys go?
Up to the Poconos.
Okay.
A place I had never been before. So
nice.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the origination of this podcast was to give people who don't always have a voice to sort of speak openly about topics. And I think for us, this podcast really started accidentally. We were having lots of rich conversations with creatives, and a lot of that information is sort of kept behind closed doors. And I think the opportunity for us to speak to people like yourself who, you know, are doing great things at brilliant agencies is a really nice way for those outside of the industry or people who are interested in working in, you know, agencies like Mother Design to kind of get more rich information. So yeah, really looking forward to this one. I think I'd like to kick things off by asking you who the first person was that made you feel talented.
Yeah, I mean, there's an easy answer to this one, and I'd imagine this would be the same for a lot of people. My parents, of course. I guess the more thoughtful answer, maybe more useful answer, is that I had a teacher in high school named Mr. Hayes. I don't even know what his first name is, but he was my media studies teacher. And it was the first time I was like really allowed to go off brief, more or less. Like, you know, it was like write an essay about the history of something cultural. And it was like, okay, I'm going to make a 30-minute documentary about the history of hip hop, and I'm going to voice over the entire thing. And I mean, he responded well to it. So I mean, it was often like, you know, really loose project briefs, and we were allowed to do what we wanted, which was new to me at that point. And like, for that to be responded well to was like really validating. I don't know.
And how old were you when this was happening?
I mean, grade 10, so what's that, like 16? I suppose.
Nice.
So yeah.
The history of hip hop sounds like something that I'd probably enjoy reading as well. So maybe selfishly, he was happy that you did that.
Yeah, perhaps. I don't know.
So, and I think that when you were kind of at that point, did you know you wanted to go into graphic design? Was kind of just creativity a thing that you seemed to enjoy?
I mean, I had no intention of going into graphic design at that point. I mean, there were things that I was interested in, like, you know, that were kind of part of visual culture. I mean, like, I was really into skateboarding, so I was reading a lot of skateboard magazines. Mass Appeal magazine was big for me back then. I mean, skate videos, mixtape covers, like that sort of thing. I mean, ultimately, I was like, 15, 16 with a pirated copy of Photoshop. and like, through that, got to, really like, teach myself how to essentially replicate the things I was seeing in culture. So I think that, you know, like those different elements plus like graffiti were all kind of things that eventually led to this. But at that point I was more interested in, I don't know, music than
It's interesting that I hear a lot of graphic designers who had a fascination with kind of skate magazines and skateboarding, because I think it had such a unique kind of visual language that was non-conformist in lots of ways, which I think inspired lots of designers.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was somewhat like countercultural at the time, you know, getting chased by security guards and that sort of thing. So I mean, it it again, like, introduced you in a way to like going against the grain a little bit.
Yeah.
I think now it's been kind of co-opted into like mainstream culture, or just been accepted as part of it. I mean, it's in the Olympics, I think,
yeah,
for the first time, in a few years. So, I mean, at that point, I think that whole world was like, pretty rich for inspiration.
Absolutely. And so that's kind of your early motivations into sort of, obviously now you're a design director of Mother Design. Mm-hmm. How did you get there? What's the story?
I mean, do you want the short answer or the long answer?
Let's go for the short one.
Okay. Well, the short answer is, I was working at a studio with friends, kind of felt that I had, I don't know, like, reached a kind of like stasis, or like a limit to the growth that I felt that I could achieve at that point. And a recruiting firm came along and brought me over to Mother Design.
Yeah. And I think that, so in terms of your background, had you always been like interested in that kind of brand creation?
I mean, I had a pretty circuitous route to brand design. Graphic design school was the only college that accepted me. So I mean, that kind of like started my journey towards this. I like went to CalArts, got a master's in critical theory. That was an MA. And then when I was immigrating to the US, I'm from Canada, they needed a physical degree. So I asked CalArts to send me my physical degree.
Yeah.
And instead of an MA, they sent me an MFA. So I was like, okay, well, I'll continue working in graphic design. So, I mean, I think that kind of brought me back into the world, especially when I had to leave the country in order to immigrate. Some friends of mine said, we're starting a studio, would really like you there at the very beginning. So, I mean, working with your friends is, I guess, the thing that kind of brought me back.
Yeah. And I think that you raised a really interesting point when we spoke yesterday around like the working with friends. You have more of a, you know, there's a decision making process with projects, and you know that we can touch on this a little bit later, but I think working in a small collective really shapes people's journeys into like what they want to do. And then I think that often you find out, oh, actually I'm good at this thing, I should sort of pursue that more. How did you find the shift from working with like friends to working in, you know, quite a renowned agency like Mother?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it was definitely a bit of a, I mean, it's every day is a learning experience, right? Like you're always trying to like glean something from whatever you're doing that particular day. But I don't know. I mean, I think that just being exposed to new stimuli in general is like the thing that kind of pushes the work forward. And I mean, yeah, it's super inspiring to be around talented people every day, whether you have known them since college or not.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So in terms of like, we've got a bit of a vested interest because we came to New York this time to run a workshop called Nobody Wants to Work for You. And I think that a lot of the questions that we were sort of posing in that workshop were around like the future of creative, the future of design. What does an agency look of the future of 10 years time look like? So the questions are gonna kind of be themed around that area. But yesterday you said something that was really interesting that I'd like you to sort of expand on, was that bad design is good.
Yeah.
Could you talk to that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like this is kind of a mantra that I've had for a while now. And I mean, you learn kind of one set of principles when you're in design school, and that's like, you know, the crystal goblet that, you know, design is supposed to kind of like, I don't know, elevate the content that it's communicating, you know, that simplification and like transparency are real like virtues. But I mean, quite frankly, I think that's kind of boring. and like, There are a few people that I think really did this. There's an artist named Enzo Mari, who, Italian artist, he called designers scoundrels. so I mean, What he tried to do was this, I don't know, design it yourself movement.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this was about kind of like, instead of simplifying things, it was like over reducing things so that you're almost being like antagonistic. And I think like, that is technically bad design. He made things harder to use. Like he wanted people to essentially like learn rather than follow instructions.
Yeah.
And you see this other places, like, I don't know if you know, like the Dogma 95, like filmmaking movement, Lars von Trier. I think he's probably the best known director to come out of it. But it was all kind of like creating obstacles that like really make you kind of notice the thing in front of you. And I think like, you know, that's kind of the dichotomy between like what is considered good design, which is supposed to be frictionless, and what is often bad design. Like if you look at a door, there are kind of two ways that you use it. You push it and you pull it. And there are two kinds of handles, one that's designed for pulling, one that's designed for pushing. So whenever you encounter a door with like that is a pull door with a pull handle, then that's transparent design. You don't even notice it. Whenever you see a door that has a pull handle and you try and pull it and it's actually a push, then like you have to kind of stop in your tracks and like notice where you're at. And I don't know, I think that ultimately kind of shows that difference between UI UX designers do. I mean, good design is great whenever it's used for a specific purpose, but what we do I think is ultimately would be termed bad design because it's not transparent. It's not frictionless. You're intentionally trying to create those like kind of, I don't know, uncomfortable moments.
Yeah. It's interesting because I think that when you were explaining it, so kind of making people stop in their tracks is a very kind of brand and advertising type of way of working. You don't want to design something that's not going to be noticed because essentially you're trying to get, you know, new customers or consumers of that thing. So yeah, it's really interesting. I've never heard someone sort of say it in that way. I think I'd like to touch a little bit into sort of where in terms of the future, I think everyone's being much more socially conscious around the projects that they take on, the brands they work with. Yesterday you mentioned kind of like a vote system that had happened. Could you explain a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, at a previous studio that I worked with, like every designer had essentially veto power about working on a project.
Yeah.
Like if it's something that they felt personally uncomfortable with, then they wouldn't have to work on it. And ultimately there were some, I don't know, more contentious projects that like it was a studio-wide, like, I don't know, direct democracy where, you know, if the majority of people were like, or I think it was like on consensus, if everybody was like, no, I don't feel comfortable doing this, then we wouldn't do it. And I think like, I don't know, that's one of the things I think is most important, especially going forward into the future, where, you know, we're trying to be more socially conscious. We're trying to be more thoughtful about the projects that we take on. And I think whenever that comes from the bottom up, then like it's even more meaningful.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that Mother Design specifically has always done great work with socially conscious brands. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you work on the Nud project? Were you?
No, that was the UK.
UK guys. Yeah. And I think that it's projects like that that I think other designers in the industry would love to work on, because not only are you using your skills to make something look great and stand out, but hopefully you're helping like a great cause. How does that differ in terms of the way that business enters the agency? Is there different like pathways that more socially conscious businesses follow?
I mean, I think that ultimately, like, you know, something that I was thinking about on my way here was, you know, you're asking about how agencies kind of differentiate themselves. And I think whenever you look at any agency's kind of mission statement, brand purpose or whatever, they are essentially all the same. And they're all essentially saying we are different, but nobody is actually doing anything differently. And I think, you know, it's great to work for the big brands of the world. Like if it feels great, you're having an actual cultural impact. But at the same time, like, working for smaller brands and actually kind of, nonprofits, whatever, you're essentially kind of giving them a leg up, and especially by investing in those smaller companies directly. Like, Mother worked with this brand, Syria, who makes non-alcoholic beer, basically. Yeah. They're a very small company whenever they came to us. And in exchange for doing the work, we invested in them. And like, I think that that's actually doing something different.
Absolutely.
I mean, there are other kind of things in that world that we've worked with. I think, you know, really working with people who are at the forefront of trying to do something differently. I think that that's kind of the most important part of, trying to differentiate.
I imagine there's also some like challenges when a brand or a brief comes to the agency where someone's trying to sort of like greenwash their way into the building. Is there like have you had experiences where a brand has come to you or the agency and been like, oh, we're all about this and we're all about that, and actually it's not the reality?
I don't eat meat or dairy. I don't believe in industrial animal agriculture, and yet I have rebranded a meat packing company. So I think like there are lots of situations in which like in that situation where you're essentially trying to make them feel more local, more friendly. I mean, it's not necessarily greenwashing, but it's it's like culture washing or something. Where, you know, you're kind of disguising a brutal reality into something that appears friendly, kind of like more approachable, et cetera. And I mean, I'm not really a fan of that.
Well, I guess also the a lot of the time when a brand will want to rebrand, they could have come through some interesting social, you know, situations where they're not standing out in the same way. You could, you know, I'm sure that's not a unique case where brands are trying to diversify because public opinion of them isn't that strong.
Yeah, of course. I mean, like, there are lots of examples, right? Like, I don't know. I don't want to call it any in particular, but there are so many examples in which, like, that's essentially what you're being tasked with. And I think, honestly, it's one of the a big part of the industry is like essentially changing perceptions of things that may not have the best one to begin with.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a topic that we spoke about yesterday, which seems to be really consistent in lots of people in the branding space, is how the inability sometimes of agencies to onboard their work appropriately with brands. Where do you think the issue is there?
I think it's a few places. I mean, I think you mentioned yesterday that like a lot of work is kind of created for the case study. And then it's kind of just like a highly curated selection of like the best examples of these different elements working together. And like you actually see it out in the world and it does not look like that case study. And I think, you know, the best brands, the most enduring ones, the ones that I personally like to work on, are the ones that kind of persist. And the way they do that and the way that I try to do that is instead of creating like a box, because most brand guidelines, which is the primary deliverable for every project, are essentially a box that you have to stay within. Like, we'll show you how to do it, you just keep doing this. And instead of that, what works in terms of like being able to hand these tools over and it to work, not just, you know, 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line, but 50 years down the line, is providing like really elemental tools that kind of form a nucleus or like a core, a seed that, those tools can be like, the way that those tools are used can be reinvented, but the tools don't need to be reinvented, if that makes sense. So they can evolve. They can respond to culture.
Absolutely. So there's room for maneuverability within the guidelines of that brand. Yeah, because I guess like at this workshop on Tuesday, we a lot of the questions were kind of pointed around what will the industry look like in 10 years? Mm-hmm. How do you think things are going to shift in the next 10 years?
I mean, I think again, like agencies need to do something different. I think, you know, you could say a lot about remote work, you could talk about AI, you could talk about freelancing, etc. But I think ultimately it's a matter of actual differentiation and actually doing things differently. Because I mean, the agency model as it currently exists is on its way out. Mm. And like to do something that isn't what you've been doing for the past however many years is kind of the answer of like actually making people want to work for you, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, a lot of on people's minds at the moment is, you know, the creative industry has, you know, a lack of more diverse people from mm-hmm. a range of backgrounds. And I think that the barrier to entry, especially for design, is very high. But the only way to kind of excite a new generation of people mm. is to make agencies more exciting for them, you know, because mm. I think that the example that we used when we sort of first launched Nobody Wants to Work for You is, you know, you'd have kids out of school lining up outside agencies to work for free. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they have the same sex appeal anymore for like young people coming out of why do you think that is?
Honestly, from my own experience, I think it's kind of we're not in the Mad Men days anymore. And I mean, I think with that, we become more of like a service industry in many ways. Like there's been kind of a loss of kind of, I don't know, a perception of expertise, ultimately like a trust and respect. Mm. Like, you know, a lot of people, I mean, I went through 8 years of school and like 15 years of design mm-hmm. To get to where I am. And like the intention there is to be the expert, you know, something that is often repeated is like, you wouldn't go to the kitchen at a restaurant and tell a chef how to make your meal. You wouldn't tell a plumber how to fix your plumbing. And I think that, you know, that's something that is been kind of an increasing trend. And you know, it's a similar kind of theme to unpaid internships and yeah. that sort of thing, where you're essentially kind of executing someone else's ideas rather than kind of trying to come up with ones of your own mm. that are kind of are respected, are I don't know, understood. I guess that's
kind yeah of yeah it's interesting. I think that I think there will be significant changes, but mm. what that actually looks like, because, you know, it seems that you've got, with especially within the branding industry, you've got big beasts that take mm. on, you know, big international rebrands, and then mm. you've kind of got this smaller, sort of more independent agencies mm. who are you're servicing. Then you've got this kind of middle ground that mm. there's lots of gray in that area. You've got mm. agencies part of big networks in that space, but mm. I think that, you know, it's the industry from a size of agency perspective is so diverse now. Mm. I mean, even in New York, you've got loads of agencies popping up every day. So, and I think that's exciting for the mm. future, that people are kind of coming up and trying different stuff. I guess for you, as giving someone advice who is sort of entering the industry, who mm. maybe hadn't had the traditional schooling, or mm. what do you think young designers can do to kind of make their way in?
I mean, I think there's ultimately a few things. I mean, working for things that you want to do and making work that you want to make, mm. I think is a big part of it. I mean, in terms of like finding inspiration or like, I don't know, kind of like things to pull from. I think ultimately there's a lot of people doing the same thing. I think that social media plays a big part in that. Mm. I mean, ultimately, I think you should like get off social media and get onto eBay, like find something that you've never seen before yeah. and look at that. I mean, yeah, I mean, watching old skate videos, like Spike Jonze videos for girl skateboards, I think is a great one.
Yeah.
But I mean, just finding references outside of what we do. I think also doing things that are not what we do is a big part of it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know about entering the industry. I mean, again, I had a pretty weird route getting into it.
Yeah.
But that was essentially from doing things that weren't graphic design, which is what I now do.
So. Yeah, yeah. No, it's true. I think that one thing I've definitely noticed about the New York design scene, and probably actually the US design scene, is that junior designers are much better at just doing spec work and spec work that hasn't been done in their education, that has been done just off their own back. And it's really high quality, some of it, you know, which I think if I would compare that book to someone in London, I don't think juniors are doing that quite in the same way. Is that like a cultural thing here? Is it, do you think?
I mean, I think that especially for younger designers who are working in agencies that are working for big brands, like they are essentially doing that thing where they follow brand guidelines, like do as I do kind of thing. So I think that without that opportunity to like work for a smaller brand, work for, I don't know, something they care about, then you're kind of forced to create work that is what you want to do. So that's a lot of like speculative, like rebrands for companies that you're not actually rebranding. I mean, a lot of portfolios have that work in it. And you're gauging them not on the work that they have done for someone, but work that they've done by themselves. So I mean, maybe it is a cultural thing. I'm not as versed in the UK creative world as you are, but it's definitely something that happens.
For sure. It's always, I think it's always really impressed me, but I think that, you know, being able to do that within, you know, you have to be passionate to go home from an entire day of working on brand guidelines to then come up with your own sort of creative, I guess, case study. We touched on this a little bit yesterday about the difference between art and design, and I know we kind of, but how where are you on that kind of sliding scale?
I mean, I think it is a sliding scale ultimately. I think that like it depends on the approach, it depends on the intention, it depends on kind of the outcome. I mean, I think kind of the inverse of like bad design is good is that good art is bad design, like for the same reasons. And I think, you know, a lot of good design is bad art, but that both things can be true at the same time.
I mean,
you know, another cliche would be that like anything can be art. And I think, you know, depending on your approach, I mean, lots of designers that I know of are really creating art more than they're creating design. I don't know. And there are artists too who are creating design in order create art. So I think it is a sliding scale, and I think it depends on the project and the intent ultimately, which is where like that defines wherever I fall on it.
For sure. I think it's there has to be a level of functionality in design, because then if it was completely non-conformist, you couldn't it wouldn't be workable for you. For the consumer. But I guess for future thinking, and you know, obviously this is really on the top of our mind, do you think there's like things that about the industry that's made it lose its charm? Like we're seeing lots of people go down that freelance route, starting small independent, especially in that branding space. Do you think that's the reason people are doing that?
I think that autonomy is honestly the biggest part of it, being able to kind of opt out when you feel like it. So I think there is kind of that ethical side of things. I think there's also kind of the kind of loss of expertise, I suppose. That's another big part of it, especially when you consider like the work that was created, even, you know, the 90s, the 80s. So I think, I don't know, those are for me the two primary reasons why I've gone freelance in the past to be able to kind of pick and choose the projects that I work on. But I mean, I think that there's a way through that. I'm not sure what it is, but
And I think that, you know, there's always going to be room for those kind of small independents. And I think that, you know, that's where some of the greatest agencies have started from, I guess, originally. I guess like get more thinking about kind of future stuff. Like, would you ever start your own agency again? Like, what do you see your like future journey being in design?
I don't know. I mean, I'm open to any possibility. I mean, like the one, like, I don't know, pathway that comes to mind is where Acne Studios came from.
Yeah,
they started as a graphic design firm, which then like kind of transformed into Teenage Engineering.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, those two things are, I mean, to some degree graphic design, but not really. So I think that you know, the I'm open to whatever possibility kind of like evolves from what I'm currently doing. So I mean, graphic design is fun, but it's not my entire life.
I think there is something amazing about people who are designers, because there seems to be, you can sort of mold your skills into different places. You know, they're almost some of like the best. You know, we've got a couple of ex-designers who work at Unknown, and they'll always have a solution to like some random problem by like jumping on Photoshop or like Illustrator and just like sorting something out. And I think that is just a really valuable like skills that you can push like through to, you know, any lots of, you know, adjacent industries. What frustrates you about the industry now?
Just to follow up on your last point, I mean, I think that's something that's kind of an analog to that, is like going over to the house of like an industrial designer or an architect. Often their furniture is like made from like cinder blocks and like 2x4s or like milk crates and like plywood. And I think, it is that kind of like being able to build something out of the tools you have at hand. Just like, you know, someone being able to solve a problem by, I don't know, looking at something differently. And I mean, in terms of things that frustrate me, I mean, I think I've mentioned two of them already. It's like the ethical approach, which I think a lot of people struggle with. I think it's the kind of loss of expertise in the field. I think also it's we're often trying to constantly go bigger. I think that, you know, that kind of like, I don't know, impetus to continually grow is not always a good thing. Like I find that there is like kind of a sweet spot that that we can hit. I don't know, between whatever works for you ultimately, and whatever works for the studio. So I think that's another aspect, that bigger is not always better.
I think that I've had a conversation with a couple of people who've worked in agencies that have like been acquired or had lots of shift around. And I think there is a real, because as a branding designer, you're constantly building things with people, you know, and you're a big part and influence in other people's growth and journey to, you know, I think there is a moment in lots of designers' existence where they go, well, actually I kind of want to start something of my own for myself, you know, because I've been launching a lot of, do you think there's any truth in that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, every studio and agency I've worked for, somebody started at some point. You know, to your point about all of these new smaller firms popping up all the time, I think a lot of times when you're working at somewhere larger, you're expected to be somewhat of a generalist. I think a lot of people want to be specialists and kind of do the things that the work in the styles or industries that they really want to. I mean, I like to be able to morph to do whatever. I mean, like the thing that kind of keeps me in the industry is the fact that, you know, for 3 months you're working in the crypto industry, for the next 3 months you're working in like global logistics and like, so I mean, I think it's up to the individual ultimately, but I can see the appeal of that.
I think it's just I guess a natural progression. In terms of like have you, you know, obviously you enjoyed your career as a designer and are continuing to do good things. Have you had any like pinch me moments, like where you've gone, wow, this is fucking cool, I love what I'm doing?
Yeah, I mean, I think something I worked on at my previous studio, Public Address, was the LA 28 Olympics.
Yes, and, you said.
And like working for the Olympics is like one of those moments where you're like, you know, I own a bunch of posters from like the Munich Olympics, from the LA 84 Olympics. Like there's the, it was one of those moments where it was like, holy shit, I am contributing to like the kind of annals of graphic design history. I mean, I never wanted to like or expected to kind of be in that position. So I think whenever that brand launched, it was really like, wow, we're like you know, in the LA Times. So I think that definitely was one of those moments for sure.
And did you remember like the first project you worked on that you were like, I'm really proud of this, like this was a
let me think. I mean, I think that there were some smaller projects. Like I worked on a few book design projects while I was at CalArts, and like the feeling that you get whenever you like have a physical object in your hand that you worked for like, I don't know, 8 months, a year to create. So I think like those were kind of the first moments, I think, where I was like, I'm actually really proud of this.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't just like meet a brief, but it was like kind of a moment of invention kind of thing. Like self-authorship, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, I imagine like as an advertising creative, the first time you see like one of your ideas out in the world must be like an amazing experience. But I even know like when I've worked with a designer who's worked on a project and I see it, I'm like, that's really cool that I, you know, have met the human being who's done that. Like, does it ever lose its charm when you find it finished something and you're like, that's cool that that's out there and people are...
No. I mean, yeah, seeing your work literally in lights.
Yeah.
You know, seeing it on a billboard. I mean, it's definitely an ego thing, but it's something that's appreciated and
for sure.
I don't think it ever gets old.
No, yeah, I can't imagine it does. And like recent sort of projects that you've enjoyed whilst being at Mother Design, have you what has been your favorite project so far?
I mean, there are a few that we're working on currently that I'm really excited about. I mean, you were mentioning Peer Space as well another one I'm excited about. We also have this continued relationship with Cadillac. I like to drive. I like race cars.
Yeah.
And like being able to work with like Cadillac Racing is really cool. Kind of a dream come true. So I mean, I think those are kind of the three that I'm like particularly stoked on.
It's really cool. And I think that, you know, consistently the Mother Design New York has made some great stuff. On the flip side of all the positive stuff, like what's your best like industry horror story? Have you got any
let me think. In terms of horrific things, I mean, I think that there have been a few instances where I've worked on something for, I don't know, let's say 8 months, and then after you finish the project you realize it's never going live. So I mean, yeah, you got paid, but you never get that gratification of actually seeing it out in the world. Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably something that's something that's happened a few times. So, I mean, it is a recurring nightmare, not just a single horror story.
Yeah, I guess, that must be, I can imagine that is the most, like, frustrating thing, especially when you're proud to sort of put your name against something. And, like, in terms of how you would sort of shape the future of like design studios, what is a new unique model do you think that could become successful or like
Yeah, I mean, I think what I mentioned previously about actually investing in the companies that we work with, I think that's a new model, which I personally am excited about. I mean, also at Mother Design, we have Mother Goods, which is like actually producing physical products.
That ourselves. Is really cool, yeah.
So I mean, it's not just like t-shirts and like beanies or whatever. It's more than that. It's actually creating like bespoke, unique objects that have like a reason to exist in the world. I mean, no matter how cheeky they are, it's exciting to like, I don't know, see products coming out of the studio that are not just t-shirts, I guess.
Yeah, I when I first came across the Mother Goods thing, I was like, this is genius. Because can you explain a couple of the projects that you've worked on through that?
I mean, we have a few designers on our team, named Tian and Teague, who really kind of like, I don't know, like are the heart and soul of that work. I mean, we've created like a Kevlar bathrobe that if you're inside your house, then you're protected from stray bullets flying through your window. I think that's one that that definitely comes to mind. I mean, there's also just so many that have never seen the light of day.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, there are I don't know, roadkill carpets, sunglasses that had a vape integrated into them. Like I don't know, there are lots of things that never saw the light of day for lots of reasons. But I think I don't know. There, every project that comes out of it, especially because it's built from essentially a global brief that anybody within the kind of entire mothership can contribute to. It ends up being like inevitably something collaborative. That's exciting too.
I think that they're really polarizing projects, and I think that often are raising awareness for something, you know, or raising money, and I think that's just a great example of how design can be controversial in a positive way. I think there's a lot of safe design that exists in the world, and you know, I guess coming back onto the topics we were speaking about earlier, the Mother Goods projects like hit a space in the market, which I think a lot of brands could actually do better, you know?
I mean, I also think, you know, they are ultimately bad design.
Like, of course.
The one that we recently launched, Lullabombs, which is, essentially like a lullaby machine that plays like war, the sounds of war. It's not going to put you to sleep, which is like the thing that you want something like that to do. So by making something essentially bad design, then you're able to kind of like, force somebody to look at an issue like children who live in war zones, you know. I think that it's definitely something everybody can do better. I mean, there are certain brands that are like built their entire brand off of being provocative, you know. I guess the first one that comes to mind is like Cards Against Humanity. That's, you know, they're digging, you can donate to dig a big hole or whatever it is. I don't know. It's a tool that I think is underused, definitely.
Yeah, I think definitely underused in the kind of branding space, because I think that a lot of ad agencies are always looking for something that divides opinion in the you know, campaigns that they run. I think some of the best agencies, their sweet spot is in that kind of controversial work that divides opinion. Do you think there's a way that branding agencies could do more of that?
You mean like more controversial work? Do you mean like either for clients or
for clients, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's again kind of like goes back to that expertise issue. Like if you come to someone and say, we think this is a good idea, and they say, no, we want you to do something else, then like that's kind of the end of the conversation.
Yeah.
So I think like if you can get someone to trust you and like get them to think, okay, well, these guys know what they're talking about, let's give it a shot, then I think that that's a way that you could actually do that. But ultimately, like, if you can like take things back to a set of reasons, a set of observations that you establish at like the beginning of a project, then you're able to kind of like not just like work for a client, but work with a client to be able to like kind of collaboratively like create a design brief that you can respond to, and whatever the result is of that brief is the ultimately the right solution, because you've kind of like thought about it all the way there.
I don't know if you've come across a thing called the Chip Shop Awards. Have you heard of them?
No, I don't think so.
So it's more of an advertising thing, but they would it's all about work that was never made that was a brilliant idea. So people will present their work that are amazing ideas, and I think that it's more of like a celebration of creativity and it just being weird, wacky and wonderful, which I think there's something really quite nice about that.
I mean, Brand New, like the kind of like like the state media of the graphic design industry, the arbiter of truth, runs this series of conferences called First Round, where again you're presenting rejected work ultimately. And I mean, often you see elements of all of that stuff in the first round in the final work, and like that's great, but often you'll also see stuff that is entirely different and way more provocative or way louder than you see actually out in the world. I mean, ultimately our job is to do something the most effectively, find the best solution, not the one that we personally want. That's it's cool to see,
like,
regardless.
Absolutely. I think that I'd love to kind of witness where, you know, being a sort of fly on the wall in situations where you sort of got a brilliant idea and you're seeing those early concepts, and then what actually eventually happens. It must just be quite polarizing, especially when the brand isn't kind of prepared to sort of work with you in the same way. I've got a question around, like, obviously with the brand new stuff, I think that design often gets heavy criticism by it, so designers will feedback negatively on other designers' work. How does that sit with you?
I would love to post my favorite comments from the Brand New comment section in like the case study for the work. I don't know. I would prefer to hear criticism than compliments, honestly. A lot of the time it's funny, but a lot of the time it's valuable criticism. Especially when like that is kind of the arena that is permitted. So like it's kind of confined to a single space regardless. I think it's the kind of like gossipy, like salacious part of the industry is people talking shit.
have you got any examples, or do you remember your funniest bit of feedback that you've read?
I think that one of my favorite kind of subversions of work that I've done is like seeing the kind of reinterpretations of the LA28 logo. It was like this variable identity that you could replace the A with anything that kind of allowed it to respond to its context. And there's a lot of dissent against the Olympics coming to LA for a lot of valid reasons. There were police cars or bulldozers or whatever it is that ultimately functioned as like a critique of the work itself. And I mean, the kind of first memorable Olympic identity was the Mexico 68 identity, and there was a lot of protests against that as well.
Yeah.
And they were essentially using that visual system to express their discontent. So that's, I guess, my favorite kind of criticism, is when somebody is actually like using the tools that you created in order to criticize whatever the thing is itself.
Yeah, I think that if you don't have to spend too long in the comment sections of like new work being released to find some kind of hilarious bit of feedback from someone random. And I think that I've kind of got an opinion on, but I think we as humans have digested more design and good design over the last 20, 30 years. Do you think that people are more interested in design? There's a lot of, there's always the chat about the logo that goes even further past the industry specific sort of publications that is in like mainstream media. Why, where do you think that shift's come from?
I mean, I think that ultimately brands are a bigger part of culture than they used to be, right? Like, they used to have a very kind of functional role in society. And I mean, you look at how a lot of brands show up on something like Twitter. I think that their role in culture has ultimately changed, where they are, I mean, it's like, you know, corporations' legal status being that of people. That's essentially how they're acting at this point. So whenever an identity changes, then a lot of people have something to say about it. And again, there are like really hilarious examples of like brands rebranding and the response being like almost unanimously negative because they felt, people felt like it was disingenuous or like a step backwards, or
I think was the cause they sort of slightly tweaked their logo, which was like changed, and that was like getting people actually angry,
you
know, like just average Joe's angry that the cause logo had changed slightly. It was the same when Zara smushed it all together. Is like
when the Gap like put it in Helvetica at the bottom of the square rather than in the center. And it's like, there's, and you know, it's great when these companies actually listen to the criticism too. So yeah, it's funny.
Yeah, they're... sweet. The one that I don't know, you won't have come across this, but it's a TV broadcast thing called Dave in the UK. And they've recently rebranded, and they've made it really like difficult, like the logo's slightly, you know, and I was like, initially I was like, oh, I'm not sure what's going on here. But then when you actually read into sort of what they're trying to do, like on any of the outdoor sort of campaign work, the logo's upside down. And it's just like stupid stuff like that I think is just funny and quite unique. Like,
yeah, it's bad design.
Yeah, well, there we go. We're back to the same point. Well, the final section, which we sort of discussed yesterday, is well, it's been changed. It used to be called elephant vomit. Now it's apparently called stinky fish. So, but I've sort of asked you to go away and think about this. So I'm intrigued to hear what you think. But is there anything in this world that you absolutely hate?
I mean, I love to complain. So yeah, there's a lot. I mean, there are a lot of candidates. I mean, industrial animal agriculture, the police. but ultimately, I think the one that I find myself complaining about the most is New York City.
Good.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's not something I wish didn't exist. I mean, it's a great place to visit, but I in my view, it's not a great place to live. And I think that's a personal preference, definitely. I mean, I lived in LA for about, I don't know, I think it was 8 years cumulatively. And ultimately New York is not LA. I mean, it's louder. There are more people in a smaller place. You personally have less space. You're literally living on top of each other. So I think that there are a lot of things that I personally find, quite grating about this place.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
it's worn you down over the last, how long have you been here now?
About 1 year and 3 months.
Okay.
but it was pretty immediate. I mean, It's a bit of culture shock. I mean, there are elements that I like about it. I mean, I'm 40 minute flight away from my parents' house.
Oh, nice.
My girlfriend lives here.
Yeah.
And those are the things I like.
Those are the two things. Well, thank you very much. It was really great to sit down. I think that I think people will get a lot of rich information from your opinion, and which is quite divisive, which I think is great. But thank you very much for coming on the podcast, and I'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening to me.